Hello and welcome to another episode of the Investors Chronicle Extraction Podcast, in which we speak to executives of London's natural resources companies. I'm Alex Newman, and today I'm pleased to be speaking with Nick Mather, Chief Executive of SolGold, one of London's most eagerly watched mining stocks. That might be to do with the fact that the shares in the company are up about 18-fold since the start of 2016. But hopefully today we can do our best to connect this stratospheric increase in market valuation with reality. So Nick, thank you very much for your time today. I wanted to start by asking you to briefly lay out, as succinctly as you can, the investment case for Cascabel the deposit, Cascabel the future mine, and Ecuador the country.
Right, thanks. Thanks for having us, Alex. The most important aspect about it's the Alpala deposit on the Cascabel license in northern Ecuador is that we have discovered a world-class or tier one copper-gold porphyry project. It's unlike a lot of the projects in Chile to the south, it's also very gold-rich, and we specifically went and focused on a gold-rich province in northern Ecuador. Being a porphyry system or a large blob of rock, it's very easy to rapidly accrete a very significant resource in it, and that's something that's going to eventually provide SolGold with we hope, a mine that will last intergenerationally, and it'll be rich enough to transcend the metal price cycles that so often trip up a lot of developers. The other very important characteristic which makes it a great investment case, we think, is that it's one of a number of targets. It's not just one ore body that companies so often enjoy here. We have a multiplicity of them through Cascabel, and we have developed a refined exploration model now for discovering these things, and we've taken a 3.5 year advantage, first mover advantage all through Ecuador, secured 22 other porphyry copper gold centres. So the plan in front of us, and which we believe is attractive to investors and certainly to me as an investor, is to build SolGold into a major copper company rather than just concentrate on the development of one deposit at Alpala.
Excellent. So, and you spoke about what you've called your first mover advantage there. I mean, I noticed in one of your presentations that one of the reasons there is not a mining industry to the same extent in Ecuador as there is in Chile is partly because you've got dense cloud coverage and also jungle. Are there not sort of environmental protections preventing the emergence of a mining industry in the middle of the Ecuadorian jungle?
One of the very important things for stakeholders and exploration companies, mining companies in a new emerging mining nation is to make sure that you go about your business very responsibly, and that's certainly something that we're doing. We spend a lot of time and money on environmental monitoring, water control practices, quality control practices, and making sure that we're environmentally responsible. We have a good name in Ecuador. We intend to preserve that and keep up that reputation. The sort of mining technique that we envisage using here is also known as block caving, and it's underground, and it minimises surface disturbance and social disruption. So the approach that we're taking to Ecuador is that we want to help the country build up its mining industry and do it in a responsible fashion, and one that doesn't leave a scar on either the people or the land surface there. So we're being careful about it and focusing on the underground aspects.
Could you give me a sense of how hard it's proven to estimate the resource under the jungle?
Well, it hasn't been all that difficult at all, because over the last 20-25 years there have been some paradigm changes in geophysical techniques that we use to identify these porphyry systems even before we put drill holes into them, and it's based largely on magnetics. A big one, a rich one, generally has a lot of a mineral called magnetite in it, and you can detect that with airborne surveys. So quite often you can tell where the porphyry system is before you have to go and charge through the jungle sampling and moving drilling rigs in and so on. So we've been able to very much refine our program down and quickly and efficiently locate these systems. And then we prioritise them using geochemistry, taking soil samples and analysing how much copper, gold, zinc, molybdenum and so on is in the soils, and that even further enables us to pinpoint where these things are, so much so that some of the world's great porphyry systems, such as Grasberg in Indonesia, have previously taken 50 drill holes or so on to define them and understand them. We were able to drill into Alpala with the very first one, and of the 50 kilometres of drilling that we've put into it so far, that's over about 35 or 40 holes. Only two of them have not hit the ore body, and a third of our holes have ranked us in the top 40 porphyry exploration holes in all of history. So that's telling you a couple of things. This project is very big, it's very rich, and we're very good at exploring for it. And the fact that we are so good at it is endorsed by Newcrest Mining's minority interest investing into the company. They're not a joint venture partner in the project. They don't control SolGold, and they're endorsing this management team to get on with the project.
Just to take a step back there, I mean, it was copper gold porphyry deposits which you were interested in when you formed this company.
Yeah.
Can you give me a sense, or give it a retail investor a sense, why you would go after two commodities? Is it a natural hedge that you're looking for the long-term earnings? Or?
No, it's more about the geology of them, Alex. We realised when we started the company in the Solomon Islands way back in the very early days in the late 90s that because these systems are geologically so young, anywhere between 3 and 40 million years old, they're not structurally chopped up, so they're quite intact. That means that once you get onto one, it tends to be very, very big. So if you can find it rich enough in either copper or gold, then that's great. But in the northern Andes, in Peru, Ecuador and into Colombia, they're very gold rich as well. So we get a one-to-one gold to copper credit. So for every percent of copper, we get a gram of gold.
Per ton.
Per ton. And at higher copper grades, the ratio increases. So by the time you get to 5% copper, you've got 10 grams gold. This is tremendous, because if you're a gold producer, you see the copper is paying for the gold and you get gold for free. And if you're a copper producer, you see the gold paying for the copper and you get the copper for free. So it's a phenomenon that is increasingly obvious to us in the northern Andean belt in Ecuador. And the fact that Ecuador had not been explored because it was covered up by cloud, rain, soil, jungle, and the porphyry system's not visible other than with these geophysical techniques, which have only in the last 25 years been developed, made the whole nation very interesting to us. And if you take the 700 kilometres of prospective rocks, and the ones we're interested in are what we call Eocene in age, about 38 million years old. If you take that belt and you superimpose it over northern Chile, which is one of the most copper-rich nations on Earth, then you would cover mines like Chuquicamata, Escondida, Collahuasi, and a number of others, and it's probably got a quarter to a third of the world's copper contained in that part of Chile. And we see the same opportunity for SolGold in Ecuador, and that's why we moved 3.5 years ago to secure the best of it for SolGold and its shareholders.
Readers or listeners will be quite familiar with the coverage we've given on the copper market this year and the quite bullish turn that the market has taken in the last year, particularly realizing the increasing demand from various sources, be them electric vehicles, etc. But I mean, clearly you're going to be mining gold as well. Can you give me a sense why you're a gold bull long term?
I can't really tell you why I'm a gold bull long term. It's very difficult to determine why some commodities have the value that they do, especially when they don't have a real industrial application. But gold is valuable because it is. It's explained variously as because it's rare, and it is indeed rare stuff, and it's hard and expensive to find, which is again why having a big porphyry system that you can rapidly accrete anywhere between 30 and 50 million ounces of gold in is a great advantage. It's stuff that everybody wants, and if we can find it cheaply, efficiently and repetitively as we can on one of these large systems, then that's going to be good for the SolGold shareholders, and that's what I really care about. I'm a significant investor and shareholder in SolGold myself. I don't expect shareholders and investors to do what I won't do, so I've got a lot of my money in here, and hopefully other people will see the common sense in that. Copper, on the other hand, is a much easier thing to predict. There's still no viable replacement for copper from a wiring and conductivity point of view. You've got Volkswagen spending $89 billion on electric cars in the coming years. Toyota are going to do the same thing. So is Mercedes-Benz. The rise in the demand of copper is inexorable, and at the moment it's unrequited. You need a new Escondida mine, which is one of the largest in the world, every 15 months. Well, we're not finding them at that rate, let alone developing them at that rate. And we think by the end of 2019 there's going to be a real problem in terms of the supply of copper, and that should be right about the time that we're coming into pre-feasibility and feasibility studies for what we believe will be a giant at Alpala.
Obviously those feasibility studies are yet to determine the true scale of what you have at Cascabel. Are you likely to be of a scale that would put you onto the radar of the largest miners in the world? I know BHP has shown an interest in the project in the past. Are you going to be of the scale that any diversified large miner would happily include you in their portfolio, hypothetically?
I think the very simple answer to that is yes, most definitely. And I refer back again to the huge diversity and number of projects of a similar ilk that we've secured all through Ecuador, and we're applying an increasingly refined exploration strategy on to find some of things. So, you know, we're finding some extraordinary outcropping mineralized rocks in some of these areas, and we don't have assay grades, but you can pan gold and magnetite in the rivers, and that's telling us that these things are indeed very strongly mineralized. You can see the outcrops with the mineralization in them, and we look forward with great anticipation to eventually getting drill holes into these things. So I think any large copper company would be very happy to have a piece of this program.
You mentioned you're a significant shareholder. I think I had it here about 6%. Is that?
Yeah, roughly? my personal interests cover about 6%.
When did you buy into the company, and have you continued to top up your holding?
I've continued to top up my holding, and DGR Global, which is a company that I also run in Australia, ASX listed company, which was the original father of SolGold, also has about 13.5%. So between myself and DGR Global, we have nearly 20%. And I think there's an increasingly tight share register in SolGold as people buy it on the basis of us coming up ultimately with a series of tier one copper projects.
That sort of quite neatly brings me to my next question. Is that I think by the time this podcast goes out, you will have joined the main market in London. I mean, you also moved to Toronto in a secondary listing earlier this year. Mm. And your stated reasons were to improve liquidity, your global standing, and also your access to capital markets. But at the same time, I mean, you're still a long, long way away from production. Are you ready to be on the main market in London, considering you're still...
Yeah,
we like to be raising money.
We think we are, Alex, because there's no point going and introducing yourselves to the sorts of funds and banks that are going to finance your mine development at the time when you need the money. You're way better off to make yourself familiar to them so that they can grow with your project. And if they want to invest in the company earlier on and take some of that growth and make some money out of it themselves, then give them the opportunity to. It's a bit shallow just coming along saying, you know, we need all this money to develop the mine now, and they've never heard of us before. So we like to get the investment markets and the funds and the banks familiar with us from well before we need big slabs of money to develop the mine. The deepest, darkest pools of capital are still in the UK and Europe, and it's important that we pay respect to that and endorse those markets. So Canada is the most, or Toronto in particular, is the most mining-familiar capital market in the world, and there's a number of banks and institutions and funds that sit on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean that we know are already very interested in taking part in the equity in the company and helping to strengthen our share register so that when it comes time to develop the mine, we'll be well equipped to do so.
And of course, you know, the details are likely to be threshed out, and it's going to take a long time to do that. I noticed in one of your presentations you would consider about a two-thirds to one-third debt-to-equity split in a project financing. Yeah, is that your general outlook when you come to a fund project?
That's a pretty standard way of doing it. The details will, of course, vary. We're planning on getting our maiden resource statement out by the end of this year. I would caution people to realise that that is the first of many. It's a maiden resource statement. We expect it to grow on a quarterly or half yearly basis from there as we get more drill data in. We have 5 drilling rigs active at the moment. There's 2 others just arrived on site. We will have 10 by the end of October or mid-November, and we plan to have 12 next year and drill 126,000 metres. If we keep the drill bits in ore all the time, that could add a very great tonnage to Alpala. We also intend next year to spend quite a lot of time and money on the collection of metallurgical and mining data, rock mechanic data, etc., to feed into initially pre-feasibility study by end of 2018 and then a bankable study by the end of 2019. So for a major project, this is a very steep curve, but it's one that we believe that we're right for the challenge on. And, you know, we look forward to the emergence of an increasing value for Alpala over 2018-2019, and the discovery of projects which look just as good as it, and hopefully even better as we explore those other areas.
Obviously, you spoke about a number of the catalysts there. You also raised money, I think, 41p in June, which is, you know, obviously a fairly helpful guide for investors already. I mean, where is that money and your current cash position? I think about $60 million going to take you.
Yeah, we currently have about $60 million US in the bank. That should last us for about 9 months flat out. Clearly, there are going to be other capital raisings in this company, but we do intend that they're made with strategic, large, long-term holders who are looking for the upside growth and the development of a mine rather than just a speculative flip in the share price. So we're being quite careful about who we place share capital with and at what price. That last raising was done with Newcrest at 41p for $40 million US, and Newcrest now has 14.5% of the company, but they are obligated to follow the wishes of at least 60% of the shareholders pursuant to a board recommendation and an independent advisory recommendation in the event that we get a takeover bid that we all want to accept in the meantime. So Newcrest can't block a change of control in the company, and it's important that people realise that we have not compromised the takeover premium in Solgold.
Very, very finally, there were 2 references to working price assumptions in your in one of your recent presentations. One was for gold, $12.50 an ounce, and one was for copper, which is $3 a pound.
Yep.
I mean, you just came back from the Denver Gold Forum, and there's a presentation by Paulson & Co. where they singled out Randgold as one of the only large gold miners to deliver decent returns over the last 10 years. They've always set an assumption of $1,000 gold price. How do you close the gap for some investors who may be nervous that anything above $1,100, $1,200 assumptions are just too high for project feasibility?
Well, Alex, you can vary price assumptions in economic studies up or down at will. The prices that we've used are not uncommon for major mining company assessments of these projects. And most importantly, the way we see it is the price at the moment. In fact, I think particularly the copper price will be higher. I can't tell you whether gold will be or not, but we do believe that using the current prices is realistic. And I think that you'll find at the time of feasibility or development that the copper price will be significantly higher. I haven't yet come across any analysis or metrics that show that copper's likely to be lower.
Sure.
I think I can't be as definite about gold, but the value of this project is mostly in copper. It's about 60% copper and about 40% gold. Of course, if the copper price goes higher, that ratio will widen even more markedly. But certainly we think the drivers on the copper price are so compelling. What the world's going through in respect of electrification at the moment and the requirement for electricity just for the improvement of basic living standards in some of the undeveloped nations is something that's really going to drive the copper price up. So that's one of the reasons why we're so interested in copper exploration, and a great way to find a lot of copper is to have a big ore body, and porphyries do just that.
Nick, thanks so much for your time today. To listen to more podcasts from the Investors Chronicle, go to Acast, iTunes, or the Investors Chronicle website. Thanks for listening.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.